This is Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS.
For co-host Bea Bonner, I'm Randy Eccles. The latest from NPR News is coming up in 20 minutes at the top of the hour. You can read about past Community Voices segments and listen on demand to most of them at nprillinois.org. The UIS Ecce Series panel, The Status of Black Lives Matter, A Shift in Policy, Culture, Justice, and Reform, continues with Dr. Tess Dooley discussing racism's effect on health.
African-Americans, Blacks here, day in and day out, experiences of racism and discrimination are literally killing Black Americans. It's not just these one-off stress events of seeing these horrible things. It's a day in, day out, cumulative stress that is literally reducing the years of life for African-Americans. Fortunately, in 2020, health disparities were never more clear than in that year, due to COVID-19. And so we can look at the federal data, we can see, you know, African-Americans and Latinos in the U.S. have been three times more likely to contract COVID, nearly twice as likely to die from it than from white Americans. Some counties with majority of African-American residents have almost six times the death rate compared to counties that are predominantly white. Here in the state of Illinois, Latinos have nearly seven times the rate of COVID-19 cases compared to white people, and African-Americans have the highest death rate. Why have we seen this with respect to COVID? Well, it really goes back to everything that I just mentioned with respect to the literature in health law and healthcare law, two important health disparity patterns that we see that are contributing to this phenomenon. First being African Americans are more likely to contract the virus due to living in urban areas. So we think about housing issues. They're also disproportionately more likely to work in high-risk essential environments. They're more likely to contract the virus. And then secondly, African Americans experience these higher rates of chronic medical conditions that are risk factors for severe illness from COVID-19. These inequities, when we tie them to longstanding barriers for accessing care, such as having food and transportation and housing, all of these different factors, then the unequal treatment, so even if they do seek treatment, then the treatment is not to the level of what a white patient would receive. This systemic racism is just magnified. This is why we are seeing the disproportionate infection rate and deaths. We really have to acknowledge this connection between systemic racism and poor health and start actively working to close that gap so that everyone has the best opportunity for good health. I love Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is often attributed of saying of all the forms of inequality, injustice in health is the most shocking and inhumane. A major issue that obviously has been identified. We have a magnifying glass on it right now. This will be an opportunity for policy to be implemented and there to be some change made. Tiffany, your research deals with the dynamic of family. As we think about all these different components of education, criminal justice, we think about health. Is the Black family personally under attack here in the U.S.?
What we're seeing today is based on a history. Everything that we're seeing today that's sort of happening with the Black family, and especially in the context of what today's theme is, which is Black Lives Matter, has a history. We can trace this history, if we think about it, all the way back to the slave trade. It stands to reason, it is highly logical that Black families in Africa were separated as a result of the slave trade. It stands to reason, it is highly logical that we did not get entire families of mother, father, children, et cetera, making their way over to all of the places that slaves were brought. We know, based on the history here in the Americas, the history that we do know, that families were intentionally separated for all sorts of different reasons. If we think about that sort of history and that lineage, and think about the things that are happening with the Black family today, the long-term impact of things like colonialism and imperialism will still be showing up today. It is not to say we also have very real historical evidence of doing things like castrating women so that they couldn't produce children. Some part of welfare reform in some states included things like tying women's tubes so that they couldn't have any more children. These sorts of practices were disproportionately done to Black and Brown bodies, despite the fact that when you look at welfare statistics, that's not overwhelmingly who makes up those statistics. And really, this is not difficult to figure out because it's just simply a population. If you think about the number of people, the number of, for instance, Black and Brown people versus white people, then statistically, it makes sense that most of the people who will be on welfare are in fact white. And that's exactly what the statistics show. But it has been the case that some of these policies have been targeted specifically at Black and Brown bodies. And one might argue ultimately then the destruction of the Black family. The other thing that I like to think about, or I was thinking about, I don't like to think about this, but I was thinking about and sort of thinking about how to answer this question is that sort of emotional labor and that emotional pain that comes with having to contend with these realities. And so I'm thinking about the number of years that were probably lost off of the lives of Trayvon Martin's mother, Breonna Taylor's mother. And I'm using mother specifically because we tend to, as a culture, associate that emotional labor with mothers. I'm sure their fathers and all of their family members are also carrying some of that emotional pain and that emotional labor. But I don't think we tend to think holistically about how those sorts of actions ultimately impact lives, impact families. We know that families have a hard time recovering with the death of a child who was just perhaps sick. Imagine the difficulty of recovering from the death of a child who was taken from you just trying to live their lives, right? So I'm thinking about Tamir Rice, for example, just doing what children do in a playground. And yes, people say they were pointing out, or they did at the time, well, he was playing with a toy gun. I wasn't living here at the time or living in Illinois at the time. And now that I do live in Illinois, I'm like, that's literally a rite of passage. Many young white children is that they get to go out and shoot in their backyard or their parents take them out shooting. And so I think when we think about those sorts of ideas and we make those kind of statements, we have to also evaluate the assumptions that underlie those statements. The history of sort of colonialism and imperialism and these notions and ideas of the Black body that are embedded in those big ideas like colonialism and imperialism. The question of whether or not the Black family is under attack in the U.S., and the answer to that is it's been under attack. It's been under attack since slavery began. We have to be cognizant of that lineage and of that history and not forget that what we're building on today is based on that history. It's very easy to compartmentalize. I caution us against doing that. I encourage us to think of the present as the culmination of a bunch of decisions from the past.
I love the statement you made about remembering the past and thinking about in what we're seeing today through the eyes of history. One of the first things that's happened in 2021 that we haven't talked about quite yet is the insurrection at the Capitol and history being made. Thinking about what we saw, the outrage, from people in the Black and Brown community about these people are doing this action, this historic action of an insurrection at the people's house, invading it, not being treated in the way that we saw protesters of Black Lives Matter treated this over the summer of 2020 in protests. Any of you, if you want to jump in and just kind of talk about that from the historical perspective and what that means to people for Black Lives Matter.
If you think about the treatment that the people who are committing treason against their own country, trying to go ahead and stop a function of Congress, breaking and entering, destroying public property, murder, people died in terms of the police response that was there. In fact, some law enforcement were taking selfies with them versus Black Lives Matter protests, which have been like 93-95% peaceful. And the response was a militarized response by law enforcement across the country in 2020. I think that really just shows this notion of the systemic, racialized, racist nature of the institutions that we have in this country and what we're struggling against. There is sort of this movement, and you'll see this linkage eventually. I don't know if you've heard of adverse childhood experiences, but what that is, if you children who experience violence, or they see violence, or they have a member of their family that have gone to prison, they are more likely to experience negative impacts in their adult life, which costs this country hundreds of billions of dollars a year, the social impact. What I will argue is that you're going to see this linkage of racism, being in the soup of racism by Black and brown people in this country. You're going to see, I think the studies are going to be there, where you're going to see this linkage really between racism and the impact on life expectancy and those types of things. It's being in a soup of racism does increase high blood pressure, does increase cardio heart-related sort of issues. I think you're going to see sort of these linkages coming up in the future.
Racism in and of itself is an adverse childhood experience. And it's something that we as Black mothers and Black fathers have to teach our children about at a young age, that we can't blind them. We would not be doing them justice to not teach them about race. As an example, our son, very small, maybe 2 years old, playing, and there were older kids around him, and we're saying that Black boy over there, and he had no perception, but we're having to explain what this means. And there's books out, Solway, and The Color of Midnight, having to explain color to very small children because they have to understand that concept. They have to understand Tamir Rice, being a 12-year-old boy, have to understand you can't go play with a gun or a toy gun like, you know, your white counterparts can do. We have to, unfortunately, our children can't be shielded from this trauma, which is an adverse experience for them. But what's the alternative? We don't have one. We have to protect them and do that. That goes back to Justin's comment about changing the curriculum and having a system of trauma-informed curriculum and trauma-informed teachers who are studying and understand how to be trauma-informed educators. A lot of the linkage we see of African-American students not performing as well, standardized testing, and well, their experiences are different. They have these adverse experiences that other children don't experience. They have to mature more quickly.
That made me think too about this question of the family. And one of the things that we can think about in that regard is childhood and like sort of conceptions and understanding of childhood. And we are at this cultural point where we see childhood as this innocent time and this protection of innocence and this time where children are supposed to be allowed to explore without fear of, you know, sort of consequence. Hearing what you're talking about, thinking about my own experiences as a parent, I think one of the other linkages to this question of the Black family is that childhood is stripped. Again, this is a historical thing. We can trace this all the way back again to the institution of slavery because children were put to work. So they didn't have the same sort of leisure. You know, slave children worked. Slave children were sold off to work. Slave children were sold off to bear more children, slave women in particular. And so I think if we think about, again, how we're understanding who's allowed the innocence of childhood and who is not, which groups are allowed the innocence of childhood and which groups aren't. I think this is very important to think about just from a research standpoint, but I also think this is important to think about in terms of cumulative like health disadvantages. Having your childhood shortened and then your overall life shortened is a very interesting thing to think about along this trajectory and tying together the themes of family and health as well. Was sparked by listening to you talked about sort of the challenges of parenting a Black boy, which I totally understand. And I'll just throw in like one final story as well, because my son is getting ready to be 16. And so we're working on driving. And like, this is a really fun time for some of his peers. And I am terrified because so many of the interactions with police start with a traffic stop. So many of those killings that we were watching over the years began with a traffic stop. I'm terrified. It should be this time where it's a rite of passage that we're all excited about. And it's just not the same. It's not the same for me as a parent. I don't know that he has these same sort of concerns and fears, but it's definitely something that I think about as a parent. And that takes me back to this idea of emotional labor and pain associated with being a Black parent.
We hope that learned from this discussion, our allies, we celebrate the live Black lives and brown lives on our campus, but we are so thankful for our white allies. We hope that you will join in with us in taking up this cause, taking up these social issues and working towards solutions and implementation of solutions. Thank you all for your help today on our discussion of the status of Black Lives Matter, a shift in policy, culture, justice, and reform. I just urge you all to continue learning about social justice issues and become a part of the solution. Doesn't have to be as a part of Black Lives Matter. There are many other organizations out there and other groups that we urge you to learn about social justice, to learn about these issues and become part of the solution. If you have questions, you can feel free to reach out to any of the panelists. As we mentioned, we work here at UIS. We are available.
Professor and moderator Tess Dooley wraps up today's UIS Ecce Series panel, The Status of Black Lives Matter, a shift in policy, culture, justice, and reform. Thanks to Ecce for making the audio available to us and for the panel of Tess Dooley, Ty Dooley, Justin Rose, and Tiffany Saunders. You can read about past Community Voices segments and listen on demand to most of them at nprillinois.org. Suggest a guest. Email communityvoices@nprillinois.org and we'll explore interviewing them. Community Voices airs weekdays at noon and Saturdays at 5 p.m. on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS. For B. Bonner, I'm Randy Eccles. Community Voices is a production of NPR Illinois.